They sat in silence for a while under the seat. Then Gerda said, "That human has got a hole in his sock." "They're good socks, though," said Angela. Maskelyne stared at them. "How can you tell?" he said. "They're his style odour-proof," said Angelo. "Guaranteed 85% Polly put the kettle on. We used to sell them in the store. Look, you can see the label." Gerda sighed. "It was a good store," he muttered. "And those shoes," said Angelo, pointing. "See them? Crucial street drifters with real rubber sole. Very expensive."
"Store shoes, are they?" said Maskelyne carefully.
"Oh, yes. Special range."
Maskelyne got up and walked over to a large leather bag half wedged under the seat. The others watched him scramble up it and then pull himself up until he could very quickly glance over the armrest. He slid back down. "That's a store bag, isn't it?" Gerda and Angelo gave it a critical look.
"Never spent much time in travel accessories," said Angelo. "But now that you mention it, it could be the special calfskin carry-on bag for the discerning executive," Gerda added. "Yes, could be."
Maskelyne took a deep breath. "It belongs to grandson Richard, you see," he said. "I saw him before, and he's in the seat up there. Grandson Richard," he went on, 39. "He's up there right now, reading a paper. Up there. Him."
Gerda had gone red. He prodded Maskelyne with a finger. "Do you expect me to believe," he said, "that Richard Arnold, the grandson of Arnold Brothers Est 1905, has holes in his socks?"
"That'd make them holy socks," said Angelo.
Sorry. Just trying to lighten the mood a bit."
"Climb up and see for yourself," said Maskelyne. They hoisted Gerda up. He came down quietly.
"Well?" said Angelo.
Gerda was looking as though he had seen a ghost.
"Speak to us, Gerda," said Maskelyne.
"This is a very solemn moment for me," said Gerda.
"I thought I could cut through some of the stitching and we could get in at the bottom," said Maskelyne, pointing at the bag, "when it's time to get off the plane."
"I am not worthy," said Gerda.
"Probably not," said Angelo cheerfully, "but we won't tell anyone." "And grandson Richard will be helping us, you see," said Maskelyne, hoping that Gerda was in a state to take all this in. "He won't know it, but he'll be helping us. So, it'll be all right."
The tree frogs were far out on the branch now. What had looked like a smooth expanse of grey-green wood was close to a maze of rough bark, roots and clumps of moss. It was unbearably frightening for frogs who'd spent their life in a world with petals round the edge. But they crawled onward. They didn't know the meaning of the word retreat, or any other word.
"It's very dark in here, Maskelyne."
"Well, you'll have to make the best of it."
"Ah! A hairbrush! I've just sat down on a hairbrush. We'll be landing shortly."
"Good.
And there's a tube of something. I'm hungry. Isn't there anything to eat? I've still got that peanut. Where? Oh, now you've made me drop it."
"Gerda?"
"Yes?"
"What are you doing?
Are you cutting something?"
"He's cutting a hole in his sock." Silence.
"Well, what of it? I can if I want to. It's my sock."
More silence.
"I shall just feel better for doing it."
Still more silence.
"It's just a human, Gerda. There's nothing special about it."
"We're in its bag, aren't we?"
"Yes, but you said yourself that Arnold Brothers is something in our head, didn't you?"
"Yes."
"Well, then,
we're about to land."
"Is this the Florida place?"
"Yes."
"Thing, do you know what happens next?"
"We will pass through immigration and customs. Are you now, or have you ever been, a member of a subversive organization?"
Silence.
"What, us? Why are you asking us that?"
"It is the sort of question that gets asked. I am monitoring communications."
"No, I don't think we have been.
What does subversive mean?"
"The question seeks to establish whether you've come here to overthrow the government of the United States."
I don't think we want to do that, do we?"
"No."
"No,
Very clever idea, though.
What is?
Asking the questions when people arrive. If anyone was coming here to do some subversive overthrowing, everyone would be down on him like a pound of bricks as soon as he answered yes.
It's a sneaky trick, isn't it? Said Angelo.
No, we don't want to do any overthrowing, said Masklin to the thing. We just want to steal one of their going-straight-up jets.
What are they called again?
Space shuttles.
Right. And then we'll be off. We don't want to cause any trouble.
The bag bumped around and was put down. There was a tiny sawing noise. A very small hole appeared in the leather.
What's he doing?
Said Gerda. Stop pushing, said Masklin. I can't concentrate. Now, it looks like we're in a line of humans.
We've been waiting for ages,
said Angelo.
I expect everyone's being asked if they're going to do any overthrowing, said Gerda wisely.
Well, what do we do next?
Angelo asked. We ask the thing, said Masklin.
Thing?
Yes.
What do we do next? The bag shifted. Grandson Richard 39 was moving up the queue.
Thing. I said, what do we do?
Nothing.
What good's that?
The paper said Richard Arnold was going to Florida for the launch of the communications satellite. Therefore, he is now going to the place where the satellite is. Ergo, we will go with him.
Who's ergo?
Said Gerda. The thing flickered its lights at him.
It means, therefore...
The bag moved, so that they lost their balance and fell over.
We're walking across the floor, said Masklin. There's a lot of humans out there, a lot of humans.
There always are, sighed Gerda.
Some of them are holding up signs with names on them. That's just like humans,
Gerda added.
Hang on, said Masklin. This can't be right. One of them is holding up a sign saying Richard Arnold. We're walking towards it. We're talking to it.
The deep, muffled rumble of the human voice rolled above the gnomes like thunder.
Can you understand it, thing? Said Masklin.
Yes. The man with the sign is here to take our human to a hotel. It's a place where humans sleep and are fed.
The bag swung sideways and hit something. The gnomes clung desperately to the inside.
I'm getting hungry again, said Gerda.
There's some toothpaste in this tube.
I'll give the toothpaste a miss, thanks.
Now there was a rumbling noise. Angelo looked up.
I know that sound. Infernal combustion engine. We're in a vehicle.
What kind of truck is it, thing?
Said Gerda.
It is a helicopter.
It's certainly noisy,
said Gerda, who'd never come across the word. It's a plane without wings, said Angelo, who had. Gerda gave this a few moments' careful and terrified thought.
Thing?
He said slowly.
Yes. What keeps it up in the science?
Oh. That's all right, then.
The noise went on for a long time. After a while, it became part of the gnome's world, so that when it stopped, the silence came as a shock. They felt the bag being carried, put down, picked up, carried again, put down, picked up one more time, and then thrown onto something soft. Eventually, Gerda's voice said,
All right. What flavour toothpaste?
Masklin found the thing among the heap of paperclips, dust, and screwed-up bits of paper at the bottom of the bag.
Any idea where we are, thing?
Room 103, Cocoa Beach, New Horizons Hotel. I am monitoring
There was the long, drawn-out rumble of the zipper. Light flooded in as the bag was opened. The gnomes dived for cover.
Masklin watched a hand taller than he was reach down, close around a smaller bag with the toothpaste and flannel in it, and pull it out.
The gnomes didn't move. After a while, there came the distant sound of rushing water. The gnomes still didn't move. The human noise rose above the gushing. It echoed even more than normal.
It sounded like it's singing, whispered Angelo.
What's happening, thing?
Masklin hissed.
It has gone into a room to have water showering on it, said the thing.
What does it want to do that for?
I assume it wants to keep clean.
So is it safe to get out of the bag now?
Nothing is totally safe, but I suggest that the human will be wetting itself for some time.
Yeah, there's a lot of humans to clean, said Angelo. Come on, let's do it.
The bag was lying on a bed. It was easy enough to climb down the covers onto the floor.
What do we do now? Said Angelo. After we've eaten, that is, said Gerda firmly.
Masklin trotted across the thick carpet. There was a tall glass door in the nearest wall. It was slightly open, letting in a warm breeze and the sounds of the night. Gerda joined him. Behind them, the human voice sang on.
What's the human singing about, thing? Said Masklin.
It appears that the singer wishes it to be known that he did something his way.
Did what?
Insufficient data at this point, but whatever it was, he did it A, each step along life's highway, and B, not in a shy way.
There was a knock at the door. The singing stopped. So did the gushing of the water. The gnomes ran for the shadows. Grandson Richard came out of the shower room with a towel around its waist. It opened the door. Another human, with all its clothes on, came in with a tray. There was a brief exchange of hoots, and the clothed human put down the tray and went out again. Grandson Richard disappeared into the shower room again.
Food, Gerda whispered. I can smell it.
A bacon, lettuce and tomato sandwich with coleslaw, said the thing, and coffee.
How did you know? Said all three gnomes in unison.
He ordered it when he checked in.
Coleslaw, moaned Gerda ecstatically. Bacon, oh, coffee.
Masklin stared upwards. The tray had been left on the edge of a table. There was a lamp near it. Masklin had lived in the store long enough to know that where there was a lamp, there was a wire.
I think I could get up there, he said.
Yes, yes, said Gerda.
But is it all right to eat grandson Richard's sandwich? Masklin added. Gerda blinked.
That's an important theological point, he muttered. But I'm too hungry to think about it, so let's eat it first, and then if it turns out to be wrong to eat it, I promise to be very sorry.
The human says that the end is now near and he is facing a curtain. This may be a shower curtain.
Masklin pulled himself up the wire and onto the table. Sandwiches had been sold back in the store's food hall. The word meant something thin between two slices of damp bread. Floridian sandwiches, on the other hand, filled up an entire tray, and if there was any bread, it lurked deep in a jungle of cress and lettuce. He looked down.
Hurry up, hissed Angelo. The water's stopped again.
Masklin pushed aside a drift of green stuff, grabbed the sandwich, hauled it to the edge of the tray, and pushed it down onto the floor. The shower room door opened.
Come on, come on, Angelo yelled.
Grandson Richard came out. He took a few steps and stopped. He looked at Masklin. Masklin looked at him. I can stay here, he thought. I can use the thing to translate, and I can try to explain. He might help us. Or he'll trap us somehow and call other humans, and they'll all start milling around and mooing. It's too risky. We've got to do it our way. Grandson Richard slowly reached out a hand and said,
Masklin took a running jump. A bacon, lettuce and tomato sandwich broke his fall. There was a blur of activity and the sandwich rose on three pairs of legs. It raced across the floor, leaking mayonnaise. Grandson Richard threw a towel at it. It missed. The sandwich leapt over the doorframe and vanished into the chirping, velvety, dangerous night. There were other dangers besides falling off the branch. One of the frogs was eaten by a lizard. Several others turned back as soon as they were out of the shade of their flower, because, as they pointed out,
meep, 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 meep.
The frog in the lead looked back at his dwindling group. There was one, and one, and one, and one, and one, which added up to... It wrinkled its forehead in the effort of calculation. Yes, one. Some of the one were getting frightened. The leading frog realised that if they were ever going to get to the new flower and survive there, there'd need to be a lot more than one frog. They'd need at least one, or possibly even one. He gave them a croak of encouragement.
Mip, mip,
he said. Masklin crept back through the grass to the gnome's camp, if that's what you could call a tiny dry space under a scrap of thrown-away plastic surrounded by soft, warm rain. It had been hours since they'd run away from grandson Richard, as Gerda kept on putting it. The sun was rising behind the rain clouds. They'd crossed a highway while there was no traffic. They'd blundered around in damp undergrowth, scurrying away from every chirp and mysterious croak, and finally they'd found the plastic, and they'd slept. There was a positive side. The thing had been listening to radio and television and had found the place the going straight up shuttles went from. It was only 18 miles away, and they'd definitely made progress. They'd gone, call it half a mile. And at least it was warm. Even the rain was warm. And the bacon, lettuce and tomato sandwich was holding up. But there was still almost 18 miles to go. "When did you say the launch is?" said Masklin.
4 hours' time, said the thing.
That means we'll have to travel at more than 4 miles an hour, said Angelo gloomily. Masklin nodded. A gnome trying hard could probably cover a mile and a half in an hour over open ground. You could have asked grandson Richard to help us, said Gerda. Why did you run away? I didn't exactly see you rushing up ready to shake him by the finger, Masklin said. I was embarrassed. It's always embarrassing meeting deities, said Gerda. They hadn't been able to light a fire. Everything was too wet. Not that they needed a fire. It was just that a fire was more civilized. Someone had managed to light a fire there at some time, though, because there were still a few damp ashes. I wonder how things are back home, said Angelo after a while. All right, I expect, said Masklin. Do you really? Well, more hope than expect, to tell the truth. I expect your Grimmer's got everyone organised, said Angelo. She's not my Grimmer. Oh, I thought the two of you were set to... We're not. I told her we were going to get married, and all she could talk about was frogs. That's females for you, said Gerda. Didn't I say that letting them learn to read was a bad idea? It overheats their brains. She said the most important thing in the world was little frogs living in a flower. Sounds like you could boil a kettle on her head, said Angelo. It was something she'd read in a book, she said. My point exactly, said Gerda. You know I never really agreed with letting everyone learn to read. It unsettles people. Masklin looked gloomily at the rain. Come to think of it, it wasn't frogs exactly. It was the idea of frogs. She said there's these hills where it's hot and rains all the time, and in the rainforests there are these very tall trees, and right in the top branches of the trees there are these, like, great big flowers called, bromeliads, I think, and the water gets into the flowers and makes little pools, and there's a type of frog that lays eggs in the pools, and tadpoles hatch and grow into new frogs, and these little frogs live their whole lives in the flowers right at the top of the trees and don't even know about the ground, and once you know the world is full of things like that, your life is never the same. He took a deep breath. Something like that, anyway. Gerda looked at Angelo. Didn't understand any of it, he said.
"It's a metaphor," said the thing.
No one paid it any attention. Masklin scratched his ear.
"It seemed to mean a lot to her," he said.
"It's a metaphor," said the thing.
"Women always want something," said Angelo. "My wife is always on about dresses."
"Launch in 3 hours and 57 minutes, said the thing.
Their temporary camp overlooked a ditch. There didn't seem to be any winter in Florida, and the banks were thick with greenery. Something like a flat plate with a spoon on the front sculled slowly past. The spoon stuck out of the water for a moment, looked at the gnomes vaguely, and then dropped down again.
"What was that thing?
Said Masklin. The thing extended one of its sensors.
"A long-necked turtle."
"Ah." The turtle swam peacefully away. "Apart from turtles with long necks," Masklin said, "what other animals are there here, thing?" The thing didn't answer for a moment. Then it said,
"I find mention of sea cows and alligators."
Masklin tried to imagine what a sea cow looks like, but they didn't sound too bad. He'd met cows before.
"What's an alligator?"
The thing told him.
"What?"
said Masklin.
"What?"
said Angelo.
"What?"
said Gerda. He pulled his robe tightly around his legs.
"You idiot!"
shouted Angelo.
"Me?" said Masklin hotly. "Is it my fault? Did I miss a sign at the airport saying welcome to Floridia, home of large meat-eating amphibians up to 12 feet long?"
They watched the grasses. A damp, warm world, inhabited by insects and turtles, was suddenly a disguise for horrible terrors with huge teeth. "Something's watching us," Masklin thought. "I can feel it." The three gnomes stood back to back. Masklin crouched down slowly and picked up a large stone. The grass moved.
"If it is alligators," said Gerda, trying to look noble, "I shall show them how a gnome can die with dignity."
"Please yourself," said Angelo, his eyes scanning the undergrowth. "I'm planning to show them how a gnome can run away with speed." The grasses parted. A gnome stepped out. There was a crackle behind Masklin. His head spun round. Another gnome stepped out. And another. And another. 15 of them. The three travellers swiveled like an animal with 6 legs and 3 heads.
"It was the fire that I saw," Masklin told himself. "We sat right down by the ashes of a fire, and I looked at them, and I didn't wonder who could have made them."
The strangers wore grey. They seemed to be all sizes, and every single one of them had a spear. "I wish I had mine," Masklin thought. They weren't pointing their spears at him. The trouble was, they weren't exactly not pointing them either.
"I think," said Angelo slowly and deliberately, "that the leader is that old guy with the big nose and the topknot with a feather in it. What do you think?"
Masklin looked at the tall, thin old gnome who was scowling at the three of them.
"Have you got any suggestions, thing?" said Masklin.
"They are probably as frightened of you as you are of them."
"I doubt it," said Angelo.
"Tell them you will not harm them."
Masklin stepped forward and raised his hands. "We are peaceful," he said. "We don't want anyone to be hurt."
"Including us," said Angelo.
Several of the strangers backed away and raised their spears.
"I've got my hands raised," said Masklin over his shoulder. "Why should they be so upset?"
"Because you're holding a large rock," said Angelo flatly.
"I'm not sure I want to let go of it," said Masklin. "Perhaps they don't understand us."
Gerda moved.
The abbot hadn't said a word since the arrival of the new gnomes.
Now some sort of internal timer had gone off. He gave a snort, leapt forward, and bore down on Topknot like an enraged balloon. "How dare you accost us, you outsider!" he screamed. Topknot screeched something back at Gerda. "Don't you harangue me, you grubby heathen," said Gerda. "Do you think all these spears really frighten us?"
"Yes," whispered Angelo. He sidled closer to Masklin.
"What's got into him?" he said.
Topknot shouted something at his gnomes. A couple of them raised their spears uncertainly.
"This is getting worse," said Angelo.
"Yes," said Masklin. "I think we should..." A voice behind them snapped out a command. All the Floridians turned. So did Masklin. Two gnomes had come out of the grass. One was a boy. The other was a small, dumpy woman, the sort you'd cheerfully accept an apple pie from. Her hair was tied in a bun, and like Topknot, it had a long grey feather stuck through it. Topknot spoke at length. The woman said a couple of words. Topknot spread his arms above him and muttered something at the sky. The woman walked around Masklin and Angelo as if they were items on display. When she looked Masklin up and down, he caught her eye and thought, she looks like a little old lady, but she's in charge. If she doesn't like us, we're in a lot of trouble. She reached up and took the stone out of his hand. He didn't resist. Then she touched the thing. It spoke. What it said sounded very much like the words the woman had just used. She pulled her hand away sharply and looked at the thing with her head on one side. Then she stood back. At another command, the Floridians formed not a line, but a sort of V-shape with the woman at the tip of it and the travellers inside it. Are we prisoners? Said Gerda. The meal was some sort of a lizard. Masklin quite enjoyed it. The Floridians watched them solemnly. There were at least 30 of them, all wearing identical grey clothes. They looked quite like the store gnomes, except for being slightly darker and much skinnier. Many of them had large, impressive noses, which the thing said was perfectly okay and all because of genetics. The thing was talking to them. Occasionally, it would extend one of its senses and use it to draw shapes in the dirt. Eventually, Angelo couldn't stand it anymore. What's happening, thing? Why is the woman doing all the talking? She is the leader of this group. A woman? Are you serious? I am always serious. It is built in. Oh. Angelo nudged Masklin. If Grimmer ever finds out, we're in real trouble. Her name is Very Small Tree or Shrub. And you can understand her, said Masklin. Gradually, their language is very close to original Gnomish. What do you mean, original Gnomish? The language your ancestors spoke. Have you told her about us? Masklin said. Yes, she says. Topknot, who'd been muttering to himself, stood up suddenly and spoke very sharply at great length with a lot of pointing to the ground and to the sky. The thing flashed a few lights. He says you are trespassing on the land belonging to the Maker of Clouds. He says that is very bad. He says the Maker of Clouds will be very angry. There was a general murmur of agreement from many of the gnomes. Shrub spoke to them sharply. Masklin stuck out a hand to stop Gerda from getting up. What does Shrub think, he said. I don't think she is very sympathetic to the Topknot person. His name is Person Who Knows What the Maker of Clouds is Thinking. And what is the Maker of the Clouds? It's bad luck to say its true name. It made the ground and is still making the sky. It... Topknot spoke again. He sounded angry. We need to be friends with these people, Masklin thought. There has to be a way. The Maker of Clouds is, Masklin thought hard, a sort of Arnold Brothers S-1905?
Yes,
said the thing. A real thing?
I think so. Are you prepared to take a risk?
What?
I think I know the identity of the Maker of Clouds. I think I know when it will make some more sky.
What? When? Said Masklin.
In 3 hours and 10 minutes.
Masklin hesitated. Hold on a moment, he said slowly. That sounds the same sort of time that...
Yes. All three of you, please get ready to run. I will now write the name of the Maker of Clouds.
Why will we have to run?
They might get very angry, but we haven't time to waste.
The thing waved the sensor. It wasn't intended as a writing implement, and the shapes it drew were angular and hard to read. It scrawled 4 shapes in the dust. The effect was instantaneous. Topknot started to shout again. Some of the Floridians leapt to their feet. Masklin grabbed the other 2 travellers. I'm really going to thump that old gnome in a minute, said Gerda. How can anyone be so narrow-minded?
shrub, sat silently while the row went on around her. Then she spoke, very loudly, but very calmly.
"She is telling them," said the thing, "that it is not wrong to write the name of the Maker of Clouds. It is often written by the Maker of Clouds itself. How famous the Maker of Clouds must be, that even these strangers know its name," she says.
That seemed to satisfy most of the gnomes. Topknot started to grumble to himself. Masklin relaxed a bit and looked down at the figures in the sand.
N-A-8-A.
"It's an S," said the thing. "Not an 8. N-A-S-A.
"But you've only been talking to them for a little while," said Angelo. "How can you know something like this?"
"Because I know how gnomes think," said the thing. "You always believe what you read, and you've all got very literal minds. Very literal minds indeed."
"In the beginning," said Shrub, "there was nothing but ground. NASA saw the emptiness above the ground and decided to fill it with sky. It built a place in the middle of the world and sent up towers full of clouds. Sometimes they also carried stars, because at night, after one of the cloud towers had gone up, the gnomes could sometimes see new stars moving across the sky. The land around the cloud towers was NASA's special country. There were more animals there and fewer humans. It was a pretty good place for gnomes. Some of them believed that NASA had arranged it all for precisely that reason." Shrub sat back.
"And does she believe that?" said Masklin.
He looked across the clearing to where Gerda and Topknot were arguing. They couldn't understand what one another was saying, but they were still arguing. The thing translated. Shrub laughed.
"She says, days come, days go. Who needs to believe anything? Belief is a wonderful thing for those who need it," she says. "But she knows this place belongs to NASA because its name is on signs."
Angelo grinned. He was so excited he was nearly in tears.
"They live right by the place the going up jets go from, and they think it's some sort of magic place," he said.
"Isn't it?" said Masklin almost to himself. "Anyway, it's no more strange than thinking the store was the whole world. Think, how do they watch the going-up jets? They're a long way away."
18 miles is not far at all," she says. "She says they can be there in little more than an hour."
Shrub nodded at their astonishment, and then, without another word, stood up and walked away through the bushes. She signalled Masklin and Angelo to follow her. After a few yards, the greenery opened out again beside a small lake. The gnomes were used to large bodies of water. There were reservoirs near the airport. They were even used to ducks. But the things paddling enthusiastically towards them were a lot bigger than ducks. Masklin looked around automatically for a weapon. Shrub grabbed his arm, shook her head, and said a couple of words.
"They're friendly,"
the thing translated. "They don't look it."
"They're geese. Quite harmless, except to grass and minor organisms. They fly here for the winter."
The geese arrived with a bow wave that surged over the gnomes' feet and arched their necks down towards Shrub. She patted a couple of fearsome-looking beaks. Masklin tried hard not to look like a minor organism.
"They migrate here from colder climates. They rely on the Floridians to pick the right course for them."
"Oh, good, that's..." "You're going to tell me these gnomes fly on them, right?"
"Certainly. They travel with the geese. Incidentally, you have 2 hours and 41 minutes to launch."
"If," Angelo said, "you're suggesting that we ride on a geese,
a goose, one geese is a goose,
you can think again, or compute, or whatever it is you do."
"You have a better suggestion, of course,"
said the thing. If it had a face, it would have been sneering. "I don't know," said Masklin. "I might be prepared to give it a try." Shrub was watching them carefully. There was something about the way she was treating them that still seemed odd to Masklin. It wasn't that she was afraid of them or aggressive or unpleasant. "She's not surprised," he said aloud. "She's interested, but she's not surprised. They were upset because we were here, not because we existed." "How many other gnomes has she met?"
The thing had to translate. It was a word that Masklin had only known for a year. Thousands. The leading tree frog was trying to wrestle with a new idea. It was very dimly aware that it needed a new type of thought. There had been the world, with the pool in the middle and the petals round the edge. One. But further along the branch was another world. From here, it looked tantalisingly like the flower they'd left. One. The leading frog sat in a clump of moss and swivelled each eye so that it could see both worlds at the same time. One there, and one there. One, and one. The frog's forehead bulged as it tried to get its mind around a new idea. One and one were one. But if you had one here and one there, the other frogs watched in bewilderment as their leader's eyes whizzed round and round. One here and one there couldn't be one. They were too far apart. You needed a word that meant both ones. You needed to say... The frog's mouth widened. It grinned so broadly that both ends almost met behind its head. It had worked it out.
Mip, mip,
it said. It meant one and one more one. Gerda was still arguing with Topknot when they got back. You won't win, said Masklin. Shrub says he argues with all other gnomes they meet. He likes to. What other gnomes? Said Gerda. There's gnomes everywhere, Gerda. That's what Shrub says. There's other groups even in Floridia and in Canada, where the Floridians go in the summer. There were probably even other gnomes back home. We just never found them. He pulled the abbot to his feet. And we haven't got a lot of time left, he added. I'm not going up on one of those things. The geese gave Gerda a puzzled look, as if he was an unexpected frog in their waterweed. I'm not very happy about it either, said Masklin, but Shrub's people do it all the time. You just snuggle down in the feathers and hang on. Snuggle? Shouted Gerda. I've never snuggled in my life. Topknot muttered something. Gerda cleared his throat. Very well, he said haughtily. I'm sure if this misguided individual is in the habit of flying on these things, I should have no difficulty whatsoever. Shrub stuck her fingers in her mouth and whistled. Half a dozen geese waddled up the bank. Close to, they didn't look any smaller. I remember reading something about geese once, said Gerda, in a sort of dreamy terror. It said they could break a human's arm with a blow of their nose. Wing, said Angelo. It was their wing. And it was swans, said Masklin. Geese are the ones you mustn't say boo to. Gerda watched a long neck weave back and forth above him. Wouldn't dream of it, he said. A long time after, when Masklin came to write the story of his life, he described the flight of the geese as the fastest, highest, and most terrifying of all. People said, hold on, that's not right. You said, Masklin, that the plane went so fast it left its sound behind, and so high up there was blue all around it. And he said, that's the point. It went so fast you didn't know how fast it was going. It went so high you couldn't see how high it was. And the Concorde looked as though it was meant to fly. When it was on the ground, it looked kind of lost. The geese, on the other hand, looked as aerodynamic as a pillow. They didn't roll into the sky and sneer at the clouds like the plane did. No, they ran across the top of the water and hammered desperately at the air with their wings, and then, just when it was obvious they weren't going to achieve anything, they did. The water dropped away, and there was just the slow creak of wings pulling the goose up into the sky. Each traveller shared a goose with one of the Floridians. They didn't do any steering, as far as Masklin could see. That was all done by Shrub, who sat far out on the neck of the leading goose. The ones behind it followed their leader in a perfect V-shape. Masklin buried himself in the feathers. It was comfortable, if a bit cold. He peered out just long enough to see distant trees sweeping by much too fast, and stuck his head down again. How long have we got, thing?
I estimate arrival in the vicinity of the launch pad 1 hour from launch.
No possibility that launches have anything to do with lunches.
None.
Pity. Well, have you any suggestions about how we get on the machine?
That is almost impossible.
I thought you'd say that.
But you could put me on.
Yes, but how?
Get me close enough and I will do the rest.
What rest?
Call the ship.
Yes, where is the ship?
It is waiting.
You're a great help sometimes.
Thank you.
That was meant to be sarcastic.
I know.
There was a rustling beside Masklin, and his Floridian co-rider pushed aside a feather. It was the boy he'd seen with Shrub. He'd said nothing, but had just stared at Masklin and the thing. Now he grinned and said a few words.
He wants to know if you feel sick.
I feel fine, Masklin lied. What's his name?
His name is Peon. He is Shrub's eldest son.
Peon gave Masklin another encouraging grin.
He wants to know what it is like in a jet, said the thing. It must be much more exciting than geese, he says.
Oh, I don't know, said Masklin weakly. Landing was much worse than flying. It would have been better on water, Masklin was told later, but Shrub had brought them down on land. The geese didn't like that much. It meant that they had almost to stand on the air, flapping furiously, and then drop the last few inches. Peon helped Masklin down onto the ground, which seemed to him to be moving from side to side. The other travellers tottered towards him through the throng of birds. The land around them didn't seem a lot different to the place they'd left, except that the vegetation was lower and Masklin couldn't see any water.
Shrub says that this is as close as the geese can go, Thing said. It is too dangerous to go any further.